Postseason baseball is here, and it is the absolute best time of the year. I'm Rob Bradford of Baseballs and Boring, and we're going to have you covered every step of the way with instant reactions from players and coaches and managers and fans and reporters and everybody else who is immersed in this awesomeness and all the craziness that comes with October baseball. So follow Baseballs and Boring in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
I don't think Amari Cooper is going to come in and be a big-time field stretcher for the Bills. You know, maybe earlier in his career that was more of what he did. But to your point, the Bills are kind of choosy with their shot plays, which doesn't necessarily line up with the frequency that Josh Allen throws the ball down the field. And so I think where Cooper is really going to be an asset is in the intermediate areas where you just need a guy to go get a bucket, to run a route, to uncover, to be a route technician and separate.
There is the voice of Joe Marino. Joined Jeremy and Joe earlier today, talking, of course, the Amari Cooper trade, two wide receiver trades yesterday in the NFL. And for more on that, we go now to the Western Hotline as Sal Capaccio joins the show. Sal, how are we doing this morning? I mean, we're a little under 24 hours since the Amari Cooper trade happened. So, I mean, how's it sitting with you?
Well, I mean, I think, as I said to the morning show guys and yesterday, I think you have to work really, really hard to get to a place where you don't think there's a, like, that you think it's a bad trade for the Bills. Now, if you think it won't work, that's fine and reasonable and fair. If you are skeptical, you know, what kind of impact he's going to make on the Buffalo Bills, that's reasonable, skeptical, and fair. But I think you have to work really hard to say it's a bad trade in any respect for the Bills. Like, what could be bad about it? Losing a third round pick next year, I guess. I mean, you know, it's a third round pick. You are essentially, you know, getting, though, however, a guy who is still really good. He's had 7 1,000-yard seasons, and you're paying him less than $1 million, not only cash, but on your salary cap. And it's a player you need. It's a position you need. So, again, I think that anyone who says it's a bad trade is just looking for an agenda and has an agenda to say that, and you have to work hard to get there. But it's perfectly reasonable to speculate or be skeptical how much of an impact it's going to make, and that's what we're going to see going forward.
Sal, one of the craziest things about all this is how fast these two trades happen together. And do you think that this trade still would have been that quick if Adams had gone to, let's say, the Saints instead of the Jets? Like, is it just because it's the Jets, or is it just because, hey, that guy is now gone, we need to go get the next best thing?
It's a great question. We'll talk with Brandon Bean. We're scheduled to hear from Brandon Bean later today. And I wonder, you know, that's part of the, you know, thing we'll talk about and ask him, like, what about the timing here? How much did the Jets trade for Devontae Adams have? How much of an impact, not only from just a practical standpoint of them adding, you know, a wide receiver, but also the timing of it? Like, were they monitoring and trying to get in on Adams? Now, I don't think you're going to get the full answer from Brandon Bean. You know, he's not going to give you all the behind the scenes, exactly how it went down. That's just not going to happen, but he might give an indication on, you know, when things happened and once that one move made it, that kind of set the market or something like that. So I also find it interesting, the timing. I would doubt that the Bills and Browns just started talking, you know, what, 35 hours ago, probably something between, you know, the two sides had been talked about going back, but we'll find out. I remember last year when they traded for Rasul Douglas and they said, Brandon Bean said, they had actually, you know, checked in on Douglas a couple of weeks before that, and they just kind of stayed in contact. And then once it came time to the trade deadline, that's when they made the deal.
So, Sal, then, on Cooper, me and Josh were having this conversation as well. And in part, it is due to the Bills, but also the Jets kind of being pretty open about the fact he's playing on Sunday night. I mean, the hamstring, I mean, the miracles of modern medicine. He's ready to go after missing a few games with the Raiders. But I think everyone kind of anticipates he's going to play a major factor on Sunday night for the Jets. I'm less so certain a Cooper's going to play a major role for the Bills Sunday against Tennessee. I think the Bills do like to slow play it. Also, of course, there's not the connection between Allen and Cooper like there is between Adams and Rodgers. But for me, at least just personally, if he's in a limited role this Sunday, I'm fine. I think, though, by Seattle the next week, I think that's probably, I feel like he's got to be full go, right?
I mean, it remains to be seen, guys. All these situations are always different. You know, you get a guy comes into your building. He's got to learn a new system, maybe. He's got to work and the chemistry's got to matter, you know, with the quarterback. Like, Devontae Adams goes to the Jets. He's worked with Aaron Rodgers a lot in his career, right? I mean, like, so they have that chemistry, but we'll see how much that translates to, you know, the offense and how much they want to incorporate him right away. But I think that he would have an advantage there to get on the field a little bit quicker than maybe Amari Cooper would here. But you could also just say, look, we're going to put him on the field. He's a 10-year vet. He's been in different systems. His same wide receivers coach from Dallas in 2021 is now the Bills wide receivers coach, Adam Henry. So I'm sure Adam Henry can get him in and, hey, remember when we did this in Dallas? This is what this is. And here's the terminology here. This is how you connect these things. So I don't know if there's one right answer there, guys. I mean, we'll see. They already released Marquez Valdes-Scantling. Now, that doesn't mean that automatically they're only going to roll with five wide receivers and these five they had on the roster on Sunday. They could elevate someone. They could elevate Tyrell Shavers to the active roster or someone else until they get Amari Cooper up to speed. But no, well, those are things we'll find out as today and the rest of the week roll on.
So, Sal, maybe my favorite thing of this trade, and Cooper was the guy I was kind of banging the drum for. The Adams situation never really made sense for me, especially with, I mean, as we saw with the Jets, how much money they had to eat up just for this year. And then I think they've already reworked some of the contract to maybe extend this past this year. But for me with Cooper, number one, as you brought up too, I think he's 800 grand this year. Very cheap wide receiver to bring on, especially if his caliber. I think maybe though the thing I'm most excited for, especially even if this just works out kind of, is it pushes everyone down a peg, right? I think a big thing for me right now is I do want to see maybe what Keon Coleman can do in the slot. A lot of draft experts really like the idea of him being a big slot, and for the most part, the Bills have had him as an outside wide receiver. Khalil Shakir, you have as a slot guy. You know, I think that's kind of what his role is going to be. But I think just having Cooper on the roster, and I think that's even where if he's just a limited role against Tennessee, just having everyone go down a peg and maybe more correctly fill out their roles, I think can do wonders for this offense.
Yeah, you know, I like to use a basketball analogy a lot when talking about this. I think it makes sense. Sometimes when you think about if you have, you know, two guards who aren't, you know, one's really, you don't really have a true point guard. So you have to have one of your shooting guards play point guard. Well, now everybody's kind of a little bit different because you're not really fitting into the right spot. But all of a sudden you get a really good point guard, right? And you're like, wait a minute, now I can allow that shooting guard to actually move to his original spot where he belongs a little bit better. And everything just flows differently. You're in the right spots. Now, in football, obviously, we're not talking about necessarily slot versus outside. They have a slot receiver in Khalil Shakir, right? People have speculated maybe Keon Coleman can move over to the slot a little bit more. And I wouldn't doubt that that could possibly happen at some point. I don't know if there's a little too much put on him there. For me, though, it's not even about slotting in the right spot positionally. It's kind of where they rank on the totem pole, right? If you go out to a game and you're a defensive coordinator and you're playing the Buffalo Bills, you're like, yeah, who's the guy that threatens us? Well, they don't really have one guy. So, you know, we just kind of got to cover him the way we do, and we'll go man-to-man. Well, now you put Amari Cooper in the mix. You're like, you know what? We got to have a little more attention there. So now you put a little more attention there. Maybe you shade the safety over a little bit to Amari Cooper. Well, now Dalton Kincaid has a little more room. Now Khalil Shakir has a little more room. I think that's where this winds up happening is, as you say, knock him down a peg. That's right, which is, I don't know like how you want to rank them. You want to put him number one atop the depth chart, whatever it is. I just think that Cooper gives the offense to have a little bit more attention put on him. When they're on the field, the defense will have to put a little more attention on him, which opens up a little bit more for everybody else.
So, Sal, I know it's a bit different because it's, you know, a shorter week, but I think you said there's like a walkthrough practice today. And, you know, what are we going to see from that? You think Cooper might be there, be somewhat involved? It is just a walkthrough. So is there a chance that he could be out on the field with the team today?
Yeah, there's a chance. I don't know that for sure, guys. You know, we'll find out later. We're not going to be able to watch anything as the media walkthrough. We don't see the walkthroughs. We don't go to it. So the media can't see that. So, you know, we'll be there later today. Sean McDermott will speak to the media at 2:15 p.m. And then I believe 2:15. I'll check on that. But it's in the 2 o'clock hour. And then they'll have a walkthrough. Yeah, it's 2:15. They'll have a walkthrough and close to the media. After that, at approximately 3:45 p.m., we're going to hear from Josh Allen, as we normally do. It's a normal Wednesday. We'll hear from select players. And if Amari Cooper is there, maybe we'll hear from him as well. That remains to be seen. And then we are also scheduled to hear from Brandon Bean right around that time or a little bit later, guys. So I know we're planning on carrying that on Chopin the Bulldog today. So if you want to hear what Brandon Bean has to say, you know, we'll have that for you.
Very, very busy day over at One Bills Drive. Sal, moving off of Cooper here just real quick, you could argue the Cooper trade maybe kind of saved some of this conversation for later down the road, or maybe not at all. But for the Jets game, I know a big talking point for a lot of fans on social media has been Tyler Bass, and it seemed to really come to light on Monday night. Where do you think the Bills go from here with Bass? Obviously, he got a contract extension with the team. There were reports, I think they were true, but that the Bills were checking out kickers or maybe working them out, what have you. And ultimately, he was not the only kicker missing kicks on Monday night. But man, it feels like it has really come to a head here.
Yeah, I think they have to start looking for other alternatives. And it doesn't mean you have to have that this Sunday. But I don't know how much longer you can go with putting Tyler Bass out there and just, you know, really kind of hoping that he makes what should be a routine kick for him, 45, 46, 47 yards. Now, it was windy on Monday night, there's no doubt, but you still got to make those kicks. And I know that there was some debate on whether or not the first one was tipped. It still wasn't struck very well. You got to make these kicks, and he hasn't been making them. And Sean McDermott said after the game, he knows he has to make these kicks. Greg Zuerlein also is I think that's a great example, though, guys, of, you know, you either, it seems like right now it's the haves and have-nots with kickers in the league. Either you have one that's hitting all the time from everywhere, or you have one that you're just, it's super inconsistent, right? There's just kind of been no middle ground, it feels like, which is why I think it's also very tricky, because who are you going to bring in that you're not thinking, I don't know if he's going to make it? Is there a street free agent you're bringing in that's replacing Tyler Bass that you're just really confident in? Then why is he a street free agent, right? Like, is there a guy that doesn't have a job that all of a sudden you're thinking, oh yeah, he'll make all these kicks? I'm not so sure. So I still think that Tyler Bass is still probably, you know, better than those alternatives. But at the same time, I don't know how you can keep going forward here, because for whatever reason, mentally, physically, whatever it is, it's just something that's going to wind up really kind of coming back and back at them again more and more, because as much as you think that it's going to turn around the next week, here comes another missed kick, and there comes more inconsistency. So I don't know where they go from here. I'd be stunned if they're not at least looking into alternatives. It doesn't mean that it has to happen today or tomorrow. And if they do have an alternative, I don't think it means that Tyler Bass is gone right away. Could be. They could make a move. It might just be, hey, let's sign somebody to the practice squad, get him in here, see what he can do, have him kick in our stadium, you know, in practice and things like that. And then if Tyler Bass has another week of struggles, maybe you make a move on that.
And then, Sal, I did want to get your thoughts on this. I mean, it is, of course, the trade that kicked off yesterday. Davante Adams to the Jets. It's felt like that has been written on the wall for a few weeks here. That seemed to be not the only team involved, but I would say definitely the favorite. He goes there. I mean, the trade's announced, and he was already in New York. I mean, that kind of tells you how everything was going. But what do you make of
Yeah, and he's already playing this week despite the hamstring injury the last 2 weeks. That's
miracles
about, right?
Of modern medicine.
Listen,
Sal, never forget.
That airplane that he flew on was real special, okay? They had some special procedures on there. They fixed his hamstring. Yeah.
Listen, he is a fantastic player. I mean, you know, straight up one for one, I think that, you know, you'd say, okay, you'd rather have Davante Adams in a trade than Amari Cooper. But you'd think about the $11 million they're paying him versus the Bills paying only $800,000. You know, you obviously see, you know, a lot of the differences and why the deal was made this way and, you know, the benefit to the Bills. That being said, sure, Davante Adams is going to help the New York Jets. I mean, now you can't just straight up, you know, double, you know, Garrett Wilson every play. You got Garrett Wilson opposite Davante Adams. That's a nightmare. And then Breece Hall running the ball. But guys, their issue hasn't been skill players. Their issue has been protecting their quarterback and running the ball with their offensive line. Their offensive line has been the issue. Aaron Rodgers is getting the ball out very, very quickly. You know, when you have Davante Adams or Garrett Wilson, you have Hall of Fame wide receivers. Does it really make that much of a difference if you're just getting the ball out to them very quickly anyway and they're not making an impact downfield? I mean, I know they want to do that, but we'll see how it goes, because that's been more of their issue than anything. It doesn't matter how great Davante Adams is if Aaron Rodgers is lying on his back looking up at the sky all the time, right? I mean, and that's kind of what's been happening here the last few weeks. The Bills got to him, and they can't run the ball to keep teams off balance, and teams aren't as scared. Now, they had some nice numbers running the ball against the Bills. They certainly did, but it wasn't like they controlled the game on the ground, right? So, yes, of course it's going to help the New York Jets because he's a fantastic football player. I just don't know if it really addresses their biggest problem, which then leads to how much of an impact can it really make.
So, Sal, one thing that I thought was pretty interesting about both of these trades, actually, is that they come pretty early on before the trade deadline. Do you think this, you know, makes the trade market active now, or do you think it goes back into a little bit of a hibernation period? And also for the Bills and Jets, I mean, what does this mean in terms of, you know, their ability to make trades for the rest of the deadline here?
Well, the Bills still have a lot of draft capital next year. Despite giving up the third-round pick they did next year for Amari Cooper, they did get a sixth back. So I tweeted out today, if you guys can look at it, at Sal Sports on X, Now, if you take the projected comp picks that they're going to get in this coming draft for last year's losses of Gabe Davis and Leonard Floyd, the Bills still have 10 draft picks next year, guys. And you're talking 2 twos and 3 fours. That's still a lot of draft capital. If the Bills evaluate their roster and say, you know what, we still need a little bit more against the run. You know what, we still need a little bit more pass rush. Maybe we still need another wide receiver. They can still play in that market a little bit if they want. Now, I don't think Brandon Bean has a huge desire to start just shedding off all this draft capital. This is a transition year, and they've kind of set themselves up to be able to have some money free next year and have some draft capital, which they have. But they're not out of the marketplace to be able to make trades if they feel that there's something out there for them to make. As far as the league is concerned, I mean, you know, these things come in bunches. We saw this, but now it's already a little bit later in the week. I'd be surprised if we see anything really come up, you know, now that we're sitting here on a Wednesday into Thursday tomorrow, and then maybe next week it starts back over again and we see a couple of these things start happening again.
And then, Sal, real quick before we let you get out of here, we've got a very busy day over at One Bills Drive. The Yankees, Aaron Judge, first home run of the postseason. How are we feeling?
Well, I love the fact that Judge finally got one. You know, he was having better at-bats, and he was getting walks, and he had a nice sacrifice fly. So he was getting better at-bats. He felt like he was close, and he finally, you know, put one out. And hopefully that just kind of propels them. But they got to go back to Cleveland, and Cleveland's a tough place to play. That's a really great home field advantage they have. They have a really good home record. So, I mean, I'm not sitting here counting anything yet. I mean, it's a nice spot to be in, up 2-0. You only need two more wins to win the series. But going back to Cleveland, anything can happen. If Cleveland gets Game 3, that's a brand-new series, guys. So, yeah. I'm feeling very, very good about what they've done the first two games. There's no doubt about that. But you got to get one out of two in Cleveland. I'd really prefer that first one.
All right. Sounds good. Sal, thanks for jumping on with us. We'll talk again soon.
All right, guys. Thanks.
That was Sal Capaccio there on the West Her Hotline. We do have some Sabres news. JJ Paterka available to play tonight against the Penguins. That, of course, per head coach Lindy Ruff. And then Ukko-Pekka Luukkonen is going to be in net tonight. Not too surprising on the goalie, and happy to see for Paterka because I think that man has got all kinds of potential on offense.
I just hope that he's, I mean, if he's available for the lineup, I'm sure he's ready to go.
Yeah, that's what I'm imagining, is he's going to be ready to go. And
I'm glad to see he's coming back this soon after that hit, because that, I was really nervous about that hit, because that would have been the second global series in a row. The Sabres go overseas, and one of their star players comes back with a concussion. Last time it was Dahlin.
Yeah.
This time it was almost JJ Paterka. Mm-hmm. It just, never go to Europe again, please. Don't do it. Anytime the NHL calls
I would argue,
don't do it.
I would argue to do it, not do it too, because you can't win there. Like, you're not winning.
No, the last time he won there was in 2011.
Yeah, and see, that's not good.
Far too long. That's 13 years.
Yep. Let's go to the phone lines, get connected to our fans, brought to you by Northtown Kia. Shop online at northtownkia.com. Brett's been waiting here a long time. Brett, how are we doing this morning?
Not yet, no.
Brett, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here. Sorry, guys.
No problem.
All right, so something that, you know, as a Bills fan for 30 years now, it disappoints me that we even had to go out and get Amari Cooper. I know everybody's excited. I get it, you know. But why did Brandon Bean not go up, you know, go up in the draft? You know, Sal was just talking about all this draft capital we had for next year or for this coming draft. You know, we could have used some of that draft capital to go up and get Xavier Legette. I mean, we let Kansas City take Xavier Worthy. Yeah. You know, has he panned out Kansas City completely? No, but he's made a lot of good plays, right? You know, yeah, I know Xavier Legette hasn't really done much in Carolina because he doesn't have a great quarterback. But Josh Allen is a great quarterback, and Xavier Legette could have flourished in Buffalo. And you know, you guys just talked about Keon Coleman being a slot guy and Khalil Shakir being a slot guy. We have too many slot guys, you know, so the fact that we had to go out and get Amari Cooper is kind of disappointing to me, that we didn't get somebody in the draft, because you look past, you know, the past 5 years, look at all the great receivers that have come out of the draft. You know, yes, I understand Justin Jefferson is a once-in-a-generational talent. I get that. But there's a lot of other guys who have been solid in their first, second years. You know, and I'm disappointed in Keon. I understand it's still early. You know, maybe he will be a great wide receiver in the next 2 or 3 years. But right now, you know, Josh's window, he's in his prime. You know, Brandon Bean, I get we're in a transition year, but every year has got to be a year for Josh Allen to go and get a ring. Thanks for letting me talk, guys.
Yeah, Brett, thanks for the call.
Thanks, Brett.
I have a tough time with that, the last point, because while yes, it is technically correct, you cannot operate like that. The Bills are in transition year, but starting 4-2, being first in the division, seeing the AFC as a whole is not great. I think Nate Geary was even tweeting that exact phrasing. You make a move. You go get Amari Cooper on the cheap, what have you. And on the draft, I had my favorites too. It sounds like Xavier Leggett was yours. They didn't go get him. They picked the guy they want.
Yeah.
I do agree, though, there's probably too many slot guys, especially, and maybe my biggest issue with Keanu up to this point this year, I mean, to the point where I was looking for any numbers that would tell me he was getting separation, is the fact that he's not getting open, that all of the issues or worries you had coming out of college are still a thing, early on, but still a thing.
It's something he had never done, and like you just said, that was what we were worried about, and our worries have come true so far. But you've brought it up twice today now. It's if Cooper comes in here and pushes Coleman to the slot, which I think he will, that changes things.
They
that
arguably
really
though,
changes
do
things.
Still, I mean, arguably they do still have too many slots. Because Khalil Shakir is just going to be, he's one of the best slot receivers in football today.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, like just right now he is, and he's got better hands than 90% of the NFL.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he catches basically anything thrown his way. This is where, though, I'm probably going to say this for the next 15, 20 years, but you need to draft receivers. You need to make sure the cupboard is not empty. Them going to get Cooper is an acknowledgement that the cupboard got empty. It is.
Right. Yeah.
Now, with that being said, and why I don't criticize them nearly as much as the Jets, is that for the Bills, it was like kind of the only weakness. You didn't have an outside boundary wide receiver. Yeah. You didn't have a guy that defenses were going to have to like kind of stare at and go, okay, make sure he does not get open. Because Cooper has been a guy who on a whim, on a random day, and this is not hyperbole, puts up 200-yard games.
Yeah.
I think he has five in his career.
And I want to go back to the Xavier Leggett thing, too, because while I like Xavier Leggett as a player, too, coming into the draft, he's not the type of guy that I would have said, if you go and get him, this season looks completely different. You don't have to trade for Amari Cooper. Mm-hmm. He's very much in the same vein as Coleman of, like, yes, he has traits, he has the abilities, but he's not quite there yet. Brian Thomas Jr., on the other hand, he was personally my favorite coming into the draft.
That one kind of hurts.
He would have been completely different. If you go out and get Brian Thomas Jr. in the draft, then
a little bit of a trade up there.
Then I think it's different. I think it's you wouldn't be in this situation where you're looking at Amari Cooper and thinking, that's the guy we need on our team right now because what we have isn't quite there. If you have a Brian Thomas Jr., looking at what he's done in Jacksonville, it's a completely different conversation. And again, these are all rookie players coming into their first year, so you never know what they're going to do with their teams. I mean, look at Xavier Worthy. He was the fastest man, the speedy man. Like,
they've been able to use him in a variety of roles.
Right, but
he does have two more touchdowns than Coleman purely due to the running game.
Right, but other than that, he has the same yardage, the same type of receptions.
Actually, he has less yardage. They have the same number of catches. Worthy's at 179, Coleman's at 202.
Yeah, because the Chiefs are on a bye week this week. So obviously Coleman got a little more action there. But I look at, you know, when rookies come into this league, each year is vastly different than the last. Like, it's not something to hang, like, a season on, because I don't think that, you know, a different rookie other than Keon Coleman would have made that much of a difference this year. I think we'd still be having the same conversation unless you get a big name, a top three.
I think the only rookie that I've seen up to this point that I'm like, oh yeah, all right, if he was on the Bills, they probably don't make the Cooper trade, and it is Brian Thomas Jr.
Yeah, or anyone above him.
But he was number four. Yeah, they were in somewhat of a position if they wanted to, you know, reaching into this year's draft capital.
Yep. But they didn't.
They could have made the jump up, got him before Jacksonville. I'm partially glad they didn't. Again, there's a lot of receivers coming into every single draft. I just want to see the Bills then it's tough for me to say I don't want to see them already extend Cooper when he literally hasn't even practiced yet for the Bills, but there will always be a part of me that's like, no, I want them to go younger. You know, I want them to go draft that guy to get them on the cheap, to have them for 4 years before you even have
don't
to pay
Don't be a
somebody.
Rental team, be a dynasty team.
Be a team that, like, you're seeing the young core come together because you're seeing on the defense. Terrell Bernard comes back and in 2 weeks is already making huge plays after missing a few weeks. Taron Johnson is the best nickel corner in the sport. Dorian Williams, with Matt Milano out, is making plays every single week. Like, they've got a good young core. Even Ray Davis, who they just drafted this year, is kind of
he
already
looks fantastic.
He's telling you kind of already in a very short sample size that in a year or two, when you've got to talk about maybe, you know, oh, do we extend James Cook? Ray Davis is already kind of telling you, nope, no, you don't.
Yep.
You'll be just fine with me. So it's tough for me to immediately point to rookies now, Brian Thomas Jr. kind of being the only one that they had a shot to. Then I'm like, if they didn't get him, or if they got him, the Cooper trade, I don't even want to say likely, but likely is not made. 803-0550, the number to call if you want to jump in talking about Amari Cooper. Sabres game tonight as well. Love to hear your thoughts. Zach Jones, Josh Schmidt here on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show on WGR.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof like Aloe, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet and the not so secret secret with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Aloe, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
Postseason baseball is here, and it is the absolute best time of the year. I'm Rob Bradford of Baseballs and Boring, and we're going to have you covered every step of the way with instant reactions from players and coaches and managers and fans and reporters and everybody else who is immersed in this awesomeness and all the craziness that comes with October baseball. So follow Baseballs and Boring in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
His ability to create separation, you know, he does such a great job at that. He's such a student of the game. He's a smart guy. You know, he played with Teddy Bridgewater in high school. So I've been from South Florida. I've obviously followed Amari for a while. And Coach and Teddy used to always talk about him, just the type of how cerebral he is and how he understands leverages and out of attack and really good and strong hands. And so he has a unique skill set, something that with some traits of guys that we have on our team, some that we don't, you know, and it'll be excited to be able to work with him and figure out, you know, how it's all going to kind of work in our offense.
There's Buffalo Bills offense coordinator Joe Brady talking about the newest Buffalo Bill, Amari Cooper. Very, very excited. Hope to see him just being in Buffalo. Be cool if we heard that he is part of the walkthrough practice or what have you. Sean McDermott speaking later today. Bills general manager Brandon Bean speaking later today. Everyone is speaking today.
Maybe Amari Cooper.
Maybe Amari. Well, probably not.
Probably not. But hey, you never know.
But yeah, it seems a very, very busy day over at One Bills Drive. Going to go back to the phones here, and we've got George on the line. George, how are we doing today? George, are you there? George is not there. That's a shame. He wanted to talk, though, about Curtis Samuel there and maybe why he hasn't been used more. On that, I think it's tough because, like, in one aspect, you're like, oh, I mean, well, he's, you know, clearly been hurt. He was dealing with turf toe for much of training camp. You know, the toe injury popped back up on the injury report.
That was the part that it's like, okay, that – it's not that it's a bad sign in terms of
turf toe is a
season-long thing, but turf toe is something that sticks around for a while.
Yeah, so you saw that and went, okay, makes sense. I get it. All right.
Yep.
But then in the next breath, you're going, yeah, but wait, but they were only using him in bubble screens anyway, so like, what are we doing here?
Right, but was that the reason?
Was that the reason?
That's where I think it might be, and we're going to see that this week. If he continues the same role he did last week,
I'm feeling a little
against
bit better.
The Titans, then I'm also feeling better. I think it's just maybe it was just an injury thing. You know, because if you think about it, when Brady had Samuel in Carolina, it was, you know, gadget plays, flea flickers, screens, stuff.
Yeah, they used him a lot and he had a career year.
Right. But what I'm saying is if Brady's sitting there saying, okay, well, he's hurt, but we still want to use him. Mm-hmm. Let's try to use him in the way we did when we were in Carolina. Him and Samuel, I'm saying, not the whole team, obviously. But
that's where you got to sit Joe down and be like, man, you work for the Buffalo Bills now. And I don't know if you know this.
Josh Allen's your quarterback.
Not even that. You cannot do a screen game here. That is just the rules. It will not work.
No,
we don't defend it, and we will not run it.
But if you think about it, I look at, you know, if that's what Curtis Samuel – you know, if he's hurt, that's his bread and butter. That's what he can always do, regardless of if he's a little banged up or not.
Mm-hmm.
It makes sense that they were trying that.
Yeah.
But if it's just that was their plan,
Oh boy.
And they shifted from it, then good on you for shifting from it, but what in the world was the plan?
Yeah, you're paying a guy $8 million a year or two. And like you said, if that was the plan and injuries didn't play a part into it, you're paying a guy $8 million a year to be effectively a gadget guy. And that, man, I think
over the next 3 weeks, if he continues the same role, you're going to see that was indeed probably just, hey, let's keep him involved just in a smaller role.
We're working him back in. He's healthy enough to play, not really healthy enough to fully go.
Mm-hmm.
Much better, though, on Monday night. 4 targets, 3 catches, 44 yards. Of course, one of them being a 38-yard catch.
Which was huge.
Which was nice. Yeah. I mean, the only catch that had more yardage to it was Ray Davis's broken play for 42 yards.
To replay that is so funny. Davis is just
waving
leading up to it, he's just waving his arms like a madman and then like catches it in the air, does like a bicycle motion in the air. Mm-hmm. You know, like when you're pedaling a bike, that's what his feet like did in the air. And then like throws it back up to himself and catches it again and comes down with it.
I did not realize how close he was to dropping it, watching it live. And then I saw the replay and I went, oh no.
Right. Yeah, I thought he dropped it.
I have PTSD from James Cook dropping wide open passes for big gainers or touchdowns or what have you. I can't have both running backs doing that to me.
One of you has to catch them.
Yeah, please. His performance, though, on Monday night was a lot of fun. It was a lot of fun. I know Frank Gore Jr. was called up. I know there was a lot of Bills fans, including him in my immediate circle, that were excited to see him and maybe see him do anything. But to see Ray Davis just somewhat seemingly on short notice, because I remember a report, and I could be very wrong, but I remember seeing that via James Cook's agency, I think Ian Rapoport or Adam Schefter tweeted out that he was going to play Monday.
Mm-hmm.
And then all of a sudden he wasn't. And, you know, Ray Davis gets thrown in there. And for him to have just shy of 100 yards and, you know, 55 receiving and just be kind of a do-it-all guy. And that first drive, Josh, oh my goodness. The physicality of that first drive. Yeah. Dalton Kincaid.
Kincaid's first catch was just boom.
And
like,
and then
good morning.
And then Davis, hello. You're just seeing him just like, I mean, actively seeking out contact.
Mm-hmm.
It set the tone for the game. It also kind of set the tone that the Bills were going to get some chirping penalties and stuff like that, because I think that's what a lot of those penalties were. Like, especially Spencer Brown's eventual pancake. I think that was more to do with for 4 or 5 straight plays he was chirping.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where they call it. I'm not saying it was right or wrong. I think that's why they called it. But the Bills really made an effort in that game to impose their will, which is something we don't always see with the Bills. We really don't. A lot of times it is more of a finesse passing game. Not saying that's a negative, but we really don't see them like outright try to stare a team in the face and go, we are tougher than you. We will hit you harder. We're faster, the whole thing. And they really sought to do that on Monday night. And I think they really kind of did. Ty Johnson himself also had a lot of big runs as well.
Revenge game, Ty Johnson.
That's right. Revenge game, Ty Johnson. And I think, though, they're going to have to do somewhat of a similar thing against Tennessee. Tennessee's a great pass defense.
But also, at the same time, Jeremy and Joe were talking a little bit about earlier today. Legarius Sneed has not looked great.
No.
For Tennessee.
No.
And that was kind of like a big, whoa.
That was one of their moves they made this offseason that made you go, oh, they think they're better than they are.
Right.
They really like who they are.
Yeah. And I just can't wait to see what Will Levis does. I want a Will
See,
Levis
I
meme.
Don't.
No. I'm saying in terms of the funny pictures. He always has something funny happen.
He does, but then this last week, like the funny meme thing that happened was the poor ball boy gets taken out.
I'm like, we've
crossed the Rubicon now. Yep. Now he's hurting other people.
He's now hurting others. We need to stop.
he is an enigma of a quarterback.
Will Levis?
Yeah.
What happened to last year? Where did all that go?
He was lucky.
Yeah, well,
because he looks a lot like he did at Kentucky. That it's he's got a wicked arm. I mean, just it very clearly NFL talent there.
Yeah,
and outside of that, it's not great.
Decision making is terrible.
Is mechanics are kind of bad.
The vision's not great. The mechanics are bad. But I wonder though, like, I mean, isn't this kind of the same thing people were saying about Josh Allen? Not in the sense of him being this bad. He was not nearly as bad as Will Levis is.
I mean, he did have some hysterical misses, though.
Yes. So
looking back now are funny. At the time, were tragic.
Isn't it kind of fair to say that if he goes through the right sort of offseason glow-up this year, not to say he could be Josh Allen, but he could just at least improve and be somewhat of a respectable quarterback?
And I think that's right. And I think guys like Allen, Herbert, Lamar.
Herbert too. I think Herbert's a better comparison with Will Levis.
But they've opened up the window now for quarterbacks to like not immediately just get trashed.
Yeah.
Instead, right. It's like, hey,
we can teach
accuracy. We can teach better mechanics. You know, you're not going to the perfect college or having, you know, all these passing academies when you were in high school.
Yeah. Because now
we can get you there.
Because then it was, you know, if you're not one of the top three quarterbacks, it's just, oh, well, sorry.
Gonzo.
Better luck next year.
With like every now and then you get a Russell Wilson or a Dak Prescott. Like Wilson, his big thing was, what was his issue? Oh, nothing was mechanics or his throwing. He was short. And, you know, you saw that in his rookie year. He was great right away. Dak Prescott, you know, a lot of his thing too was that he just wasn't as precise of a passer coming out of Mississippi State. He was much more considered like a physical runner and more of a problem for that. But you saw pretty early on, especially when he had a very talented Dallas team, he was able to kind of grow gradually. Will Levis, though, I just don't think he even has like kind of that window too, because I don't think Tennessee's coach likes him. And I think that's a big part of this is that, look, he ultimately was not benched. But I do not think Brian Callahan is a fan of his at all. You heard it in the first few weeks. Where
he sounds very
pick,
annoyed.
Yeah. That just like,
dude, he just sounds like a coach that's just fed up with his quarterback trying to get through the season.
Because I think it was like in the first 3 weeks. Like it was like, oh, okay. Yeah. And a lot of it too is just like, you're 23, 24 years old. You're in your second year. Like, how are we still having these conversations? How are you making these mistakes? What have you? And to some of it was unfair. But there is also that. Yeah, I mean, like we all love Josh Allen because he's able to make those insane plays that just no one else can make, right? Will Levis is the look of a guy who wants to make those plays, has the same mindset to make those plays, and can't. And that's where you get the funny memes and the insane interceptions that have you just like looking, if you're a Tennessee fan, going, are we sure Mason Rudolph is not better? Are we sure?
I mean, he did do okay that one half quarter.
He did all right. But I look at like him and Jordan Love are like mirror images of each other, but in the sense of like Love can make those plays, but does have a lot like Allen early in his career. Some of the turnovers that you're just like, oh, what is happening here? Like, what is going on?
Right.
But I mean, he had a throw over this weekend too that just was like, he threw it into triple coverage, but threw it just high enough that only his receiver could get it.
Mm-hmm.
Will Levis, the poor guy, throws it. He's going to throw it an inch shorter.
He's going to throw it chest high, and all three cornerbacks are going to just catch it together.
I am interested, though, to see how he looks against this Bills defense, which, I mean, now as they keep getting healthier, and you've got Bernard back, you've got Taron Johnson back, that is going to be fun to watch. And then also the Calvin Ridley situation. We were talking about it off air. I don't think we brought it up yet.
He was mad.
He is upset.
He is mad.
I mean, words we can't play on the radio kind of stuff mad after the game of like, I need targets
I
earlier.
I need the bleeping ball.
This is getting ridiculous. Like the whole thing. And it's just like, yeah, okay. And I don't want to take a victory lap because like they can obviously turn it around. But like I felt this way about Tennessee like the whole offseason is I'm like, man, they're making a lot of moves for a team that thinks they're way better. Like this offseason felt like Will Levis last year threw like 25 touchdowns and 7 picks, and they're like, yeah, but if he started, you know, all 17 games, he's throwing 35 touchdowns, you know, what have you. That wasn't that at all. It was one really good game that was awesome. 4 touchdowns, deep balls, the whole thing. It was great. And then a Miami game in which he didn't particularly play well. He did wild stuff. Like he threw his body to the wind and said, if the tornado kills me, it kills me. But that's why they didn't play that well. It was more Miami losing the game. Like, he was really living off of his first career start. And I think the Titans were taking that and going, if we can just harness that, we're going to be good. And to this point, I mean, 5 touchdowns, 7 picks. It has not been good in the least. And again, 1-4. And then you come to Buffalo, who, I mean, now that fan base in that stadium is going to be rabid. With Amari Cooper, the win over the Jets, you're 4-2. You're sniffing 5-2. The one seed kind of feels a little bit of alive again. You know, there's also going to be, I would imagine, a lot of Bills fans. Something I thought about too. You stole Amari Cooper from the Chiefs, even if they weren't involved in it. It's the feeling of, yeah, but the Chiefs didn't get him. We did. After 2 straight losses, I mean, the fan base is back, and the sky is falling attitude is not there. And it was not a great win over the Jets. It was more the fact of, but you won a game you typically lose,
and I don't think,
and then you made the Cooper trade.
I think that the vibe was still good even before the trade, but that trade just, you know, sends things to the moon, and it's largely in part because of, like we've talked about all day today, is what he brings to this team is not only just the ability to be down the field and catch the ball, but also the openness he's going to give to other receivers. the ability to be a distraction and let other guys get open. And Kincaid, too, not just receivers. You have to, you know, include tight ends in there as well because, you know, Kincaid's a great pass catcher, and hopefully this also helps activate.
I'm hoping they're starting to push that more. 803-0550, the number to call. Zach Jones, Josh Schmidt. You're listening to the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show on WGR. Welcome back, everyone. Zach Jones, Josh Schmidt. You're listening to the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show.
Yeah. Real quick, this song. What does this song make you think of?
I do have a movie.
There is a movie,
and I cannot think of the name.
I can solve it for you right now.
Yeah,
Evan, do you know the movie?
Oh, it's Joker. There we go.
Oh, that's not the movie I was thinking of.
It's exactly what I was thinking.
There are a lot of things I think of when this
song specifically makes me think of The Replacements.
Oh, that works too.
It's
one of my favorite
football movies of all time. It's such a good movie. Keanu Reeves plays a quarterback, which is just wild.
Is it Shane Falco?
Shane Falco, baby.
Yeah.
Shane Falco. And then Gene Hackman plays the coach.
That's right.
Other than that, I don't remember. Oh, Jon Favreau's in it. He plays a crazy linebacker.
Yeah.
Who else? I don't think there's anyone else that big in that movie, but
it is wild with Keanu Reeves. Objectively, he's not a great actor. You get Keanu Reeves.
Get out.
But he has always been super popular.
Stop. What are you talking about?
He's never gonna be in a period piece drama that's Oscar bait. He's never
it's
gonna be
not,
in that.
It's not his shtick.
No, I know. But what I'm saying is he's not an actor's actor.
Think about it though. Think about how many actors there are that are great actors for very different things. John Candy.
Okay. Yep.
He's one of the most beloved characters of all time, or actors of all time, just because of how good he is in all the comedies and family movies and things like that. But he was never in a period drama piece or whatever threw at me with Keanu Reeves.
But he's not a good actor. It's Keanu Reeves every time. But
he's just playing himself. Which, hey, sometimes people say that's the best kind of acting. You're just being yourself.
Oh my goodness!
No, I will no. I'm just standing on a hill to have an argument.
I would say he's not going to be that guy. No one's ever going to confuse him with Daniel Day-Lewis.
No, right. I know what you're saying. I'm just being that guy right now. But no, that movie though,
I have not seen that in years.
That song just always makes me think of that movie because that's when if you watch the movie or if you've seen it, it's when Shane Falco comes out of the locker room and in the big game that they're supposed to win, and everyone's like, oh, there he is.
There he is.
So
that's his music.
Yeah.
It's the perfect montage song.
Yeah, and it's just that movie, too, is just like the quintessential 90s sports movie.
Yes, it is.
It's a good movie.
Yeah.
Sorry, I didn't mean to get off a tangent there on The Replacements. But
I think you're right, though. It's the perfect 90s sports movie. That's going to do it for myself and Josh Schmidt. Coming up next after a quick timeout as we do get ready for Sabres pregame tonight at 6, 7 p.m. puck drop against the Pittsburgh Penguins. Sabres Live, you're listening to WGR.
Postseason baseball is here, and it is the absolute best time of the year. I'm Rob Bradford of Baseballs and Boring, and we're going to have you covered every step of the way with instant reactions from players and coaches and managers and fans and reporters and everybody else who is immersed in this awesomeness and all the craziness that comes with October baseball. So follow Baseballs and Boring in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.